Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. If you've been listening to our last two episodes, you know that I'm exploring and sharing the small towns of Coffee County, Georgia. You've heard me thank the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority for their sponsorship of this whole season of Small Town Podcast. And while the city of Douglas is too big by my measure to be classified as a small town, at least for purposes of the podcast, we are visiting the three small towns that certainly do qualify. Today, we visit our final small town in Coffee County, and we have a slightly different conversation than what you might be used to. Instead of a local elected official, we talk with a longtime resident whose impressive career in education gives us a new perspective on rural communities. We're going to go talk with Dr. Greg Tanner in the small town of Nichols, Georgia. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Our nation is going through an incredible transition right now. There's a mass migration to small towns and rural communities. People are seeking out vibrant communities with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, low cost of living, and strong local economies. If that sounds like something you would like to find, then I invite you to discover the city of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. All right, and today I find myself in Nichols, Georgia, in Nichols City Hall. Actually, I'm in the council room, much like some of the other small town council rooms I've seen, and I'm joined by not an elected official. This is going to be a nice conversation, a little departure from my normal episodes, but I'm joined by Dr. Greg Tanner. Dr. Tanner, a longtime resident of Nichols, and so Dr. Tanner, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
I appreciate it being here.
Absolutely. Good to be here, and just down the road. We share a road. Highway 32 goes through Ocilla, and I took it all the way here to get to Nichols today.
Yeah, that's right. I actually lived on Highway 32 a majority of my life.
So, okay.
Yeah,
I'm
still living on it, really. So, yeah.
Either way, City Hall.
Either way.
Yeah. So, I'll start this. I'm interested in our conversation because it's going to be a little different than some of my other conversations, and we'll get into why in just a little bit. But I'll start with the same question I always start with all my guests. Were you born in Nichols, Georgia?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I've always lived here in Nichols, Georgia. In 1969, of course, my parents were here, Waycross, and they, you know, again, that's where I was born, in Waycross, Georgia. Of course, came back and...
Same day, or at least next day, probably.
Yeah, probably next day, whenever it was.
So not technically born here, only because facilities.
Exactly. That was the only thing. I was in Waycross. So, yep. But yeah, Waycross, Georgia, 1969.
Mm-hmm. But then born in Waycross, got here as quick as you could and raised all your life here in Nichols.
Yes, so. I did. Uh-huh.
Well, talk about, because sometimes, you know, like I told you when we were setting up, sometimes I ask that question and someone says, like I said, the mayor of Hiawassee, she said Havana, Cuba. And we followed that journey, how she got into Hiawassee, Georgia, became the mayor there. But when there's somebody that's born and raised in the town we're in, I always say, what was life like growing up here in Nichols?
Yeah, you know, with my family, both my mother and my father, pretty much his family, the Tanners have always been in this area in Coffee County, some of Ware County and everything. The first sheriff of Coffee County was a Tanner. So we've always, that side of the family have been here. And my mother's side, the justices, they actually came from Mississippi. And my great-grandfather, he had a sawmill here, brought a lot of residents of Nichols to Nichols from Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And so I guess my family, Tanner family, has been in here longer than my mother's family. But, of course, we've been here since 1969.
Yeah.
You know, right here in this facility right across the street is the elementary school. But, you know, years ago, it was the high school.
Yeah.
K through 12. So I started my first days, and I guess it was 1974, kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And right across the street over there. And, you know, in the small community here, and people don't realize, I started off with about 20 of my classmates, and I graduated with those same classmates.
Yeah.
So, we were a big family growing up in education or in the school over there at Nichols High School at the time. And you just knew everyone. So
you had the goods on them from first grade.
From first grade, you know. And the thing about it was, too, the teachers also had the goods on you as well.
Yep,
so,
yep.
But one of my grandmothers, she actually was a resident beautician. Mm-hmm. So all the teachers, the female teachers, would always go to her on Thursday and Friday and get their hair. So I had no chance of getting away with anything.
No, because they'd tell your grandma.
Exactly. They'd tell grandma. And before I could get home, walking home, they'd already called mama and let her know.
Did you ever have, now, it's still predominantly females that are teachers in education today, but did you have a male teacher one year and thank the Lord because you had a better chance of grandma not finding out?
You know, I don't, I guess my male teachers, they were pretty, one of my male teachers, Coach Wayne Sasser, he was one of my, well, actually my coach for Coach Basketball was there. He was pretty tough. But yeah, but the elementary teachers, they were on top of you. They were very good teachers.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what did you, so you graduated from Nichols High School,
yeah,
and the same campus is there, but it's, yeah, now Nichols Elementary School, and that's a foreshadowing we'll get to in a little bit as, yeah, far as your life's journey. What did you, what'd you do after high school?
Well, after high school, I always knew, my mother and father was pretty strong about, and just always in the conversation of, that you were going to college.
Yeah, foregone conclusion.
Yeah, it was just, you never, that, you know, high school was not, you know, anything you would stop about. And I remember sitting around the dinner table and we talked about, okay, how was your day? What did you do? Okay, what are you going to do? And so I graduated in 1987 with my classmates, and one of my good friends and I, we went to Abraham Baldwin College in Tifton, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Highway 32, going right through Ocala, right on through. So I was there for 2 years. And at the time I went over there, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought I was going to go into education. I wanted to go into law enforcement, you know, but at 17, 18 year old, you really
you don't know.
You don't know what you were going
to
do.
You might think you know.
Yeah, exactly. And one night I was coming back from somewhere. It was actually 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. It was really late. And I saw a state patrol had someone pulled over. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, you know, wait a minute. You know, if something was to happen to this gentleman out here, state patrol, no one would ever know until in the morning. I'm like, you know, I need to go into education, not law enforcement. So that's just too tough.
That one incident made your choice,
yeah,
for you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious at this point. So when you decided to go into education, what would you end up getting a degree? So you went ABAC for 2 years.
Yeah, and I'll say this at ABAC. We had my advisor there, Miss Ellen Vickers. She was really good. She took me under her wing. And again, you're thinking about a young boy leaving Nichols, Georgia, not a very small town. Hmm. And I understand Tifton's not a small town, but understand it's a lot bigger than Nichols.
Oh, man, yeah.
And
metropolis.
Exactly. So, you know, you're in a big town. But she took me under her wing, and she really helped me. She guided me. I actually got very involved on the campus and really kind of went to Georgia Southern at that point. She, okay, actually had gone to Georgia Southern, but it really didn't have an influence on me. But I went to Georgia Southern. They were doing the football right there with Irk Russell.
Oh, yeah.
years ago. He had retired, and so some of my good friends here from Nichols were already over there. Mm-hmm. So went there for 2 more years. So graduated from there, and during that time, I always wanted to get into coaching. So I was contacted the Valdosta State girls basketball coach at the time. and asked if, you know, if I could, I want to get my master's and master's degree, and if I could, you know, help you coach. And he wrote me back. At the, you know, of course, email was not going on back then. Yeah, our texting or anything. You know, these are snail mail letters. And he wrote me back, and he was very, the letter was very exciting for me to be a part of it. And so I was excited about going over there and being a graduate coach about Valdosta State. But a little interesting, at that point, I started really kind of hanging around Citizens Christian Academy. My brother was there. And he was playing basketball.
And that's in Douglas.
That's in Douglas, yep. Yes. And Citizens Christian. And the headmaster there, Mr. Eddie Risch, he offered me a job. Well, you know, I never thought about going to work. You know, I was always going to school. So I accepted that position there, and I was there at CCA for 2 years. So coached basketball. And one of the things that I talked to him, asked him about, is that, listen, you know, I wanted to get my master's. And I want to be able to coach, but in the spring, I want to go take classes. I don't want to coach any baseball or anything in the spring sports. And he agreed to that. So it was just basketball. And within 2 years, I was able to have my first master's. So I was excited about getting that. So, but that kind of led me to CCA. And my brother, he was there. I was able to actually assist coaching him his senior year. So that was kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. So,
and what after that? You said you did that for 2 years.
Yeah. Okay.
During that time, you got your master's. So you had a choice between going to Valdosta.
Yes,
I did. And doing college coaching.
Yeah.
And then you got the opportunity to do CCA.
Right.
While, and then still get your master's. So you just had to travel a little more.
That's it. That's exactly right. So I had 2 years of teaching experience and my master's.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to go back to college and coach. That was my dream. And so I ended up applying for a position at Abraham Baldwin, ABAC, as the girls' softball coach. And so I was fortunate to get that position there. Okay. So that was really exciting, and to get that position and coach. And it was a great year. I was there for 1 year. We actually won the region and won the national championship.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And that was an exciting year. Again, at the time, I think it was 24. So, you know, you still really don't, at that age, don't comprehend what you've done.
And
So I was getting a lot of calls from different areas, different coaching to be a coach here and there. So I got a call one day to come back to Coffee County. I'm like, okay, well. And really what it was a secretary from the Coffee County school system called and said, can I activate your file? Which I had applied everywhere at the very beginning.
Sure.
You know, just trying to get my foot in the door. And I said, yes, ma'am, that would be fine, because I didn't want to burn any bridges. But again, I assumed it was basically just to get to be a coach for Coffee County school system at the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I rocked on around and let it play out. And then the secretary called me back and said the superintendent would like to meet with you on certain dates. I'm like, yes, ma'am, that will be fine, you know. And I start, okay, what is this for? In my mind, I never did say anything, but I didn't realize that here at the elementary school, the principal and assistant principal were retiring here in Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
And a group of people were supporting me for coming back to be the elementary principal. Yeah. Problem was, they never told me about it.
Including you in the conversation.
Exactly. So I came home, and my mother actually, you know, told me about what was kind of going on. And I was like, well, you know, that would be a good job. But again, I'm 24, about to be 25 at the time. There's no way. And I had already started my second master's. And so I figured, you know, just whatever. So ended up, and it was a long process to get there, but I became the principal at Nichols Elementary at the time. They had consolidated. It was no longer a high school.
I was just going to say now, so that's the same that's right across the street from where we're sitting.
Exactly.
In Nichols City Hall. That was where you graduated high school.
That's right.
That's why I mentioned that earlier.
That's right.
So you ended up being the principal.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's not too many years after.
No.
You said you were 25 when you got that
position?
Yeah,
I was 25 when I got the position.
That's pretty young.
Yeah, so. it was really young. You really didn't know what you were getting into. But, you know, it was such a, again, small town. The faculty there were from Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
They knew me. Of course, a lot of them had taught me. And they were very, very supportive. So when we went through the interview process, it was just a natural fit. One of the things I think about with small communities, you know, a lot of people don't understand the dynamics of how a town operates. You know, Osceola is certainly different from Nichols. Nichols is different from Broxton and that kind of stuff. And so I was very supported by the faculty, and it was really a faculty decision at the time. It was not top down. And they presented my name, and again, the board supported it. And I could not have been successful without the faculty. I mean, they were just super people, really.
So I know that you're not still the principal there. You moved on, and we'll definitely get to what you did after. But how many years were you the principal there at Nichols Elementary?
I was there for 4 years.
And so this is why I was so interested in kind of this education angle. So I've got a couple questions at this point. At this point, you've been doing some coaching. You have been at a high school and doing coaching, but you so far in the story haven't been an elementary school teacher. So how was that? Did you essentially, I'm laughing because I want to ask, what was it you learned in the first year really quickly? Because I'm sure there were some things, the steep learning curve of what you're dealing with while you're running a school, the organization part, which certainly is different than the teaching. You still have to be familiar with how the dynamics of that classroom
very,
works.
Very, very true. It was really, I mean, and going back to when I was teaching at Citizens Christian, I did teach high school, middle school, and of course it's a small private school.
Sure.
And I did teach some elementary PE classes.
Okay.
So I did have that.
So you did have some. Okay.
A little bit.
Right.
You know, again, you probably, you know.
Not extensive.
Not extensive at all. But a little bit. So when I arrived, again, I had an assistant principal. She was just tremendous. You know, without her, without the faculty, again, I would not have been successful. It was not because of me. Mm-hmm. We all got together and basically developed a plan of what, you know, we needed to do and how we needed to go. And it was faculty driven. And I would have to remind them, wait a minute, y'all wanted to do this. Now, we're doing this because y'all wanted to do this. And we came so far so quick. Within that, at the time, they were giving out School of Excellence from the state superintendent's office at the time. And the principal, the guidelines, the principal had to be there for 4 years before you could apply. So we made significant strides. And one of our strides was the faculty said, you know, we need to get our parents involved. And I was like, of course. I mean, I'm from Nichols. You know, why didn't I graduated with Johnny's dad, come to this parent-teacher conference? Well, I'll go see Johnny's dad. So I would drive down there and see him, you know, and go to in their homes. And so we, as a group, decided we're going to get 100% of parent-teacher participation at parent conferences.
Yeah.
Parents conference, we're going to see every parent. Other schools in the county pretty much said, that won't ever happen. Well, we did it. And we continue, you know, it gradually, you know, it jumped from, I think it was really, you know, maybe 50% at the very beginning. Then we jumped to 70, 80, and then again, it went on to 100%. And we were going to homes. We were going, you know, trying to find out exactly what the kids needed, where the situation was. I mean, their situation in their home. And over a period of time, that took notice not only in the county, but also in the state. And again, I'm still young in this and understanding what we're just doing what we are supposed to do, you know. And one funny story is that, you know, I was coming back from a meeting in Douglas, and right there at Streets Outlet, Streets Factory, there's a pond right there. And I saw two of my parents that were right there fishing, and it was parent-teacher conference. So I got back on campus and I asked the teacher, have they come yet? They were like, no, they haven't seen them. I said, okay. So I was able to, I called the police up over here and said, well, you just run over there and tell them they need to come to school. You know, it's nothing emergency or anything like that. And Reuben Woodbury, he was a policeman, still is here. And he ran down there and said, listen, will you go see about your, you know, go see the teacher so they can talk to you about your child and everything. They did. It was no big deal. You know, probably now it would be a major problem if someone wants to do that. But again, we were all Nichols's family. And
I was going to say that story there just illustrates that sense mm-hmm. of community that is very small town.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Mayberry type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But it did take notice. And within 4 years, we received the School of Excellence. And that was exciting to see the faculty receive that. I mean, that was really impressive. And so, you know, after 4 years, they moved me to a larger school. I learned you don't need to be too successful
because they'll You'll be a victim of your own success.
Exactly.
Where did you go next? Let's follow the story.
Okay. I left there, and at the time, Satilla Elementary School, they were building, it was overcrowded, and they had built another Indian Creek Elementary School. So they were dividing up the kids, and they were moving the principal from Satilla to Indian Creek, and they needed, and so it was, the school was about twice the size of Nichols, and they moved me over there. So I went there, and I was there for 2 years. And my wife and I at that time asked her to marry me. So she was in medical school at the time, but she once she graduated, she had to do a residency, and we moved to Greenwood, South Carolina for 3 years.
Okay.
So that's the reason I left Satilla. Probably still would be at Satilla if if I hadn't gotten married and that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You said for 3 years, so you spent time up there for her residency.
Yes.
Did you end up doing an education?
Yes, and that was kind of a funny story there. Again, I applied. No one knew me in Greenwood, South Carolina, so I applied to, it was a high school, for a basketball coach. Mm-hmm. And talked to the AD, and he basically told me, said, "You're just overqualified. We can't use you." And I'm like, "Well, I want to be used, but I became a principal there in Ware Shoals, South Carolina,
okay,
for 3 years. So I was there for 3 years as principal. So,
and what after that? You said 3 years. So at the end of 3 years, you went somewhere else. I came home. Okay.
You know, and we really enjoyed Greenwood. It was a family oriented, but it still was not family. Our major reason to coming back, returning to Coffee County in this area, is because of family, grandparents, my wife's parents, and because we wanted our children to be around their grandparents. And I came back. There was a position. There was actually two positions. And one at the middle school was a principalship at the middle school, and then there was an assistant principalship at Coffee High School. Mm-hmm. And so I applied for both of them, and I got the assistant principalship at high school.
Okay.
And over ninth grade.
Okay.
And so when I arrived there, within a few months, they moved me as the principal of the Coffee High School.
Okay.
Yeah, that was because, again, my—
They got you back into things quickly.
Yeah, it was really it was not planned. I was going to go into a high school, assistant principal of high school, and then hopefully move back to elementary school.
And instead,
they moved me to
the principal job.
I went to the principal's job and I was there at Coffee High School for 8 years. So that was really enjoyable. I really enjoyed that. You know, I thought elementary was fun, but the high school, of course, there was so many dynamics to it that I certainly agreed. I enjoyed that, doing that.
I know we've got more to go in your career. Because when you tell me the end date of something, I know that means you move
on. Yeah,
but I want to pause and ask this question. You've kind of already alluded to the importance of family and being here, so it may have always been a desire. But if I can go back a little bit,
okay,
you went to ABAC. You went to Georgia Southern. You almost took a job coaching in Valdosta, which is still kind of close by. Yeah. It's not, it's just a little south of here, but not Coffee County. Were there ever thoughts in college, maybe just after graduating high school, of, all right, I'm done with this town. I'll come back for Thanksgiving and Christmas, but I'm going off to bigger cities, better things. Were some thoughts about that, or was it always, this is where I want to be?
Well, my dad told me when I was young, sometimes you have to go away in order to appreciate what you have here.
Yeah.
When I left Nichols and went to ABAC, as a student, of course, it was a different change. But really, it was significant when I left when I was in a faculty or instructor over at Abraham Baldwin. I realized that year that, again, the relationships here in Nichols, small towns, small communities, it's a family. We talked earlier about good and bad and that kind of stuff but there's so much more that you want your children to be able to walk down the streets. I want when you walk into the store and Johnny over there, but if Johnny sees my child acting up, that Johnny would call me and do it. So answer your question is that I never was a big city person. Mm-hmm. The relationships is the biggest thing, I think, that always drew me back to this area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So any temptation to go on something else was usually overweighed.
It was. Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. All right. 8 years as the principal at Coffee County High School.
Yeah.
And since you said 8 years, there's a next. So what happened next?
Well, in my current position now, there was a position that opened up at South Georgia State College as the dean of students, and they actually called me and asked me if I was interested in that. And so really hadn't thought about it, but okay, we'll try it, that kind of stuff. And so I applied and got the position there and kind of maneuvered. I mean, just been there since 2012. And, within about 2 or 3 years, I'll be able to retire. So
we're nearing the end of the career.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I knew not to ask next because you said I moved my current position.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Mm-hmm.
All right. So we've got quite a broad spectrum. You've done some middle school in your early days.
Yes.
You've done some college, coaching, very early days, elementary school, slight bit of teaching.
That's right.
Mostly administration at the high school level, and now dean of students at a college.
Yeah, and now I'm the vice president at Advancement in Government Relations and Athletics. They moved me to another position at the college.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So with all of that experience, this is where I was very eager to kind of get into the conversation of, I guess, getting your perspective on the challenges, but also, people aren't going to be surprised when I ask this, the advantages of rural education. You've already laid out some of them with your story of sending a police officer to go down and get some parents fishing a pond.
Exactly.
Hey, you're supposed to be up talking to your kid's teacher.
That's right.
But talk about it. Obviously, you got smaller classes. You said there were about 20 students when you were at Nichols High School. Mm-hmm. But just talk about that in general. There's all this focus on rural in Georgia. We're seeing it in various aspects, healthcare, education, economic development. And it's always here's the challenges, here's what we need to do. And certainly those exist, but I know there's some benefits too. And you've kind of already alluded to some of them.
Yeah, you know, I could go through and give you all the technical things about education and everything. But again, it goes back, I'll say it very simply, in the sense of relationships. When I was here in Nichols as a principal, we only had maybe 300 kids, not very many, but I was very good about knowing which kid was in which class and actually where they were sitting in that class. I mean, it was just, you know, not because they were in trouble, not because of anything. It's just I knew my students. And so, I mean, I enjoyed it. As I moved into, and again, at Coffee High School, when you know, at one time we were at 2,100 kids in that one building.
Yeah.
It was huge, and it's not built for that number of kids. We had floating teachers, and of course, that's been changed because they've added some additional schools. But
and everybody's going to ask, well, why didn't you just build another high school right away?
Exactly. Why didn't you build another high school? Well, you know, something about money just kind of throws it off right there. But they did add the freshman campus, and that took away the ninth grade, so we had just 10th, 11th, right, and 12th grade.
Yeah, but building a new high school in a rural
yes,
rural place is not as easy as
is it think. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But, you know, even at the high school, I knew majority of my kids, but there was all, I didn't know them, you know, where they sat. I didn't know exactly the relationship piece because it was just a larger school.
Yeah.
But again, answering your question, I think, you know, the relationships is the biggest things. Now, here at Nichols, when I went through high school here at Nichols High School, we had a English teacher or a math teacher that taught me in ninth grade, 10th, 11th, and 12th. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's to the advantage of, you know, when I left off in ninth, what I needed in the 10th grade, he or she could help me start.
That teacher
me up.
Already knew.
Yeah. Already knew me, already had contacted my parents.
Right.
You know, and that kind of.
Which goes back to relationships.
Relationships.
Yeah.
In a larger school, again, in Coffee High School, we had a set of teachers that taught ninth grade. Of course, they passed them to the next set of teachers that taught 10th grade. And again, they had to relearn the kids. So the small town atmosphere is just, it's really heavenly type. Because I'll go back to I didn't, you know, talk about the athletic part of here at Nichols High School. And I can actually see through the window right here, the old gymnasium that we had a lot of good basketball games. The community, that was a community event. No matter if we were winning or losing, the community was right there.
No fair weather friends.
Exactly. They were always there. I mean, of course, y'all have experienced it with the winning that y'all had in Osceola and everything. And so we were family. So again, going back to, you know, again, relationships, being a part of a family, that itself overcomes a lot of the X's and O's, a lot of the 1+2 type things. And I think, you know, if a child is struggling in a classroom and you have that relationship, sometimes you kids are and the teacher don't bond. But if you have that relationship, they work together more so they can accomplish what they need to accomplish.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about, because now that you talked a lot about that, you did a good job of, I asked for challenges and advantages and you just went straight to advantages.
Well, challenges?
And I guess what I'm trying to address is I never want to sugarcoat things with this podcast, right, or in interviews and say, oh, it's all rainbows and unicorns or anything like that, because there are issues. We have, and it's the population density works for us on quality of living and getting to spread
out.
True. And works against us on some, you know, economies of scale as far as a cost per student in a smaller place. But I'm sure you've seen that in the administration level.
You're totally right, because, again, at Nichols High School, we could not offer the majority of electives that we offered at Coffee High School.
Yeah.
The Coffee High School art program is phenomenal. The band, the chorus program, the ROTC. I mean, those are things that, you know, again, certain kids enjoy going into the ROTC. We never could have offered that here. So you didn't have the larger number of electives.
Right.
That is a challenge. So certain kids could possibly miss their opportunity to identify what they really liked.
Yeah.
We had some kids, I would have told you that would have been really artsy in my class, but we didn't have art here. So we had some kids that, we didn't have football. We had baseball and basketball, and they would have been great at other sports, but we just didn't have it. Yeah. So the challenge is, that was probably the biggest challenge, I guess you would say, the opportunities.
So this is another, and I've actually had this part of the conversation come up with elected officials on previous podcast episodes. So to answer that, consolidation happens in multiple high schools in a county consolidated in one larger high school. So you can offer some of those things, and that's an advantage, certainly. But I've had people suggest that, I guess there's something about the sense of community that goes away when you move everything. Because you just mentioned, you know, the gym you can see across the street. There are no high school basketball games in that one now. It's an elementary school and probably very, very much supported by the community. But at some point, you get to a certain grade, and now you got to go to the next town over.
That's right.
Still in the county.
That's right.
So speak to that a little bit, because I didn't even, I guess, realize it as a person going through school myself, but this experience and going to towns and hearing how consolidation, people actually say, oh, they took away our high school.
Yeah.
So as a person who, you know, when you have your class reunions, you go back and it's an elementary school now.
Yeah.
One that you have fond memories of as a principal now.
That's right.
What's that done? What's the shift? Because there's some pros and cons to that.
Yeah, and you're totally right on that, because again, the family. We're talking about going to the basketball game, everyone would show up because, you know, just they knew me, they knew my family, I was playing. So now, boom. So before consolidation in Coffee County, we had 15 basketball players on the court, 5 from Nichols, 5 from Broxton, 5 from Coffee High School. Mm-hmm. Now we go consolidation, only 5 are out there playing at
right.
one time.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, we lose 10, 10 opportunities for those kids.
Right.
And again, the challenges of that. But you had a lot of parents, a lot of people just really said, you know, that's Coffee County, that's Douglas. So I'm not
right.
going to the games. I don't really care, you know, that kind of stuff.
The city that's the county seat gets all the glory.
Yeah, exactly.
On that one.
You know, it goes that way. And again, if you didn't have a child playing, they just did not show up. And
whereas they would have if it was right there.
They've been right here.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a lot of, still, I believe we have a lot of parents send their kids to Alma, Bacon County. And again, that, you know, that is a smaller school. Don't know the reasons, of course, but it is a smaller school. But yeah, you have that, and you can still hear it to this day about, you know, when our high school was here, when our school was here. But the sense of community, you really felt it at the time. Several businesses shut down. Mm-hmm. I think at one time we had only one store open. The convenience store was closed. And this is before the prison came here to Nichols. Mm-hmm. So everybody was actually having to leave to go work. So we had one little convenience store that's right down the road that was open. And I was in college finishing up. And when I came home, the town was dead. I mean, it really killed the town in the sense of community.
And I think a lot of people don't realize the economic impact of doing those changes. So I'm going to ask you a question that I'm not trying to put you in hot water with anybody, but as a professional educator, mm-hmm. and someone who's been very directly involved with education in Coffee County, both in Nichols and in Douglas, mm-hmm. at the high school, if you could go back in time and tell people, would you encourage them to still consolidate because of the advantages that consolidation offers? Or would you say, hey, guys, let's leave it as because you said there were 3 high schools.
That's right.
When you were coming through.
Yeah.
Nichols, you said Broxton.
Nichols, Broxton,
and
Coffee High.
Coffee High and mm-hmm. Douglas. Mm-hmm. Which do you think would be better?
I go back to my core value of relationships. And I think, you know, if you have a child that is having problems in the early stages, we can identify that. Because, again, the teacher in the first grade could talk to the second grade.
Right. In a bigger system, that's just not happening
just,
to the same degree.
Yeah, it's tougher for the teachers. They've got a lot on them.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the principals, you know, of course, we were principals that were here for several years. Again, they knew the families. They knew that little Johnny needed help because of circumstances at home. Just was part of the community. Now, again, and I say that at principal at Coffee High School, I didn't know all the situations of all my kids and why they were having their problems.
Yeah.
So again, to answer your question, again, I'm a small community person. And I think that goes back to the small community schools.
Yeah.
I just think we can identify problems earlier from those kids. And I think we can help them faster.
You can tell you're not a politician. You didn't give me a political answer. You went straight for it.
Yeah.
I'm used to posing questions that people know they got to win an election in a couple of years, and they got to be careful how they answer.
I promise you, I'm not running for anything.
And you only got 2 more years to retire, and you're at a college nearby.
That's right. That's
so
exactly
you're safe on all counts. Well, I want to talk more about Nichols and growing up here and actually some of your parents' involvement in local government. But before we do that, I want to do a segment we've done on previous podcast episodes called the Get to Know You questions. So I've got 4 questions to help the audience get to know you. I'm going to get to know you a little better. So 4 questions. First question is, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname?
I've been called GT, Coach T. I guess Doc is probably the nickname, I guess, right now. Doc.
When did you, because now you talked about going for a second master's, but I guess we didn't talk about when you went and you get a PhD or a doctorate?
Yeah, I got my master's, again, my second master's at Valdosta as well. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I wasn't married, so I was like, why not? I just kept continuing going to school.
You go to school for work, and then you go to school after school.
That's exactly what I was doing. So, yeah, and I got my doctorate later on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Tanner. I introduced you to that, but then I realized I wouldn't get to that. Okay. So, Doc.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the most common one? Hey, Doc?
Probably so.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Doc.
Mm-hmm. But you don't tell people they have to call you Dr. Taylor.
No. You know, that's a funny story, too. My wife, and I aggravate my wife about it because she was getting her MD degree. And technically, I was the first doctor in the family.
There you go.
And so when we were getting married, the preacher that was marrying us, Herbert Box, a great guy, we were talking to him, and we were joking about, how are you going to introduce us? Is it going to be Dr. Lydia Tanner, Dr. Greg Tanner, how are you going to do this? And, you know, we were like, that's not us.
Right.
You know, our titles are not us. We're Greg and Lydia. So
how did he introduce you?
Greg and Lydia.
He just said Greg and Lydia.
Yeah.
Doctor and Dr.
Yeah,
Tim.
They didn't, you know, so that was no big deal.
All right, Doc. Mm-hmm. All right, mm-hmm. Second question. What would be your go-to karaoke song?
Go-to karaoke song?
Yeah, you're in a karaoke bar or...
Oh, so you're probably talking to the most conservative guy.
This is going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to have fun imagining whatever song you say, you, with a microphone, words going across.
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
You getting stumped?
Yeah, I'm getting stumped.
I got a question later that's going to help you.
Okay.
All right. This next one will be easy, though. What is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Oh, my favorite meal.
See, this one's easier. I told you.
Yeah. I can sit down. Well, you know, whatever my mother cooks is my favorite meal.
All right.
And my wife, I should say
you
that.
You better say that. Yourself.
Yeah.
You got a favorite meal that your mom or your wife
cooks? Yeah, exactly. Well, my mother cooks pork chops and cube steak and fried chicken and, you know, peas and corn. And of course, my dad gets it all the time. I don't get it that much. So I guess that's my favorite meal.
Okay.
So,
all right. There you go. All right. I told you that was easy.
Okay.
All right. This is going to help you. If you could attend any concert of any singer, band, duo, any kind of performer of any kind, whether they're now dead or alive, whose concert would you want to attend?
Well, I always wanted to go see Garth Brooks. My wife made that arrangement. So
cool.
I've seen that one.
Okay.
So, I mean, really, I guess Dolly Parton would be fun to see. Looking back on some of those older singers, I'd kind of enjoy going back to that.
Got a particular one?
All right. Well, I say older, but, you know, like Alan Jackson, that would be fun, I think.
So yeah. Alan Jackson?
Yeah. But again, as conservative as I am, I could sit in the Lazy Boy and watch him on TV. And I'm fine.
Come on. You want to go to an Alan Jackson?
My son is really almost mirror image of me because we went to the Garth Brooks concert and he fell asleep.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, he was right there and he was asleep during the whole
concert. Everyone says Garth Brooks is a great entertainer and your son didn't think so.
He sleeps with everything, so he was good.
All right, so we going with Garth? Dolly Parton, Alan Jackson, which one?
I'll go with Alan Jackson.
Alan Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So now I'll go back to the karaoke question, and maybe that'll help you.
Oh, yeah.
What Alan Jackson song would you want to cue up to do karaoke to?
Oh, gosh.
This was the one that stumps everybody.
Gone Country, I guess it is.
Gone Country.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And everyone right now that knows you, listening to you say that, has got a picture in their head, and it's a good picture.
Yeah, I would hope so.
All right. Well, Doc, thanks for letting me get to know you.
Okay.
For the final time in this series, let's check in with John Henry from the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. John, I usually ask this at the beginning of a conversation, but we jumped right in when we started talking. Tell us a little bit about your background. You and I, we've shared that we kind of have similar upbringings as far as geography, both in the coastal Georgia region. But go ahead and talk about where you were before here, because you weren't born in Douglas and Coffee County.
No, I wasn't. And I consider myself a professional economic developer. I really do practice the art of economic development and try to better the communities. But I've got a background that runs from real estate through regional planning and economic development planning, natural resource planning. I've got an undergraduate degree in economics, and I've got a Juris Doctorate degree out of Atlanta from John Marshall.
You sound like you spent a whole lot of time in school.
All of the gory details. Yeah, well, I probably spent a lot more time than I should have because I was,
You overlearned.
I was working here and there and changing schools and losing some credit and some of that stuff. But I'm from the Savannah area, and, you know, most of my family still resides in the Savannah area, so I consider myself a Savannah native. But I did spend my formative years in Screven County from the time I was 10 up through high school. Was in Sylvania, Georgia, in Screven County. And so I'm very used to the rural aspect of these small towns and the lifestyle. And I tell you, one of the things that I didn't realize this position existed at the time, but when I graduated high school and saw all my friends, we had to go off for opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, you knew you were going to go to college and a lot of you would split up, but there was no coming back home. The jobs were left. This was late 80s, early 90s, and all of the manufacturing was closing and going overseas. And it was just a tough time for industry in the South. And, you know, like I said, I didn't even know economic development existed at the time, but I kept questioning. It's like, why doesn't somebody do something about this? What you know, there's got to be something that you can do. And so that stayed in the back of my mind is, you know, there's got to be a way to breathe life back into these rural communities and or to at least mitigate some of it. To keep them from drying up.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've seen that here more recently. At post-2000, we've seen a lot more focus on rural development and people returning back to the rural communities and growth. And we've seen a lot more manufacturing jobs and good jobs coming back to these communities.
You spent, like you said, you know, a good bit of your growing up life and then even some of your first couple jobs was over in coastal Georgia. Now you're in definitely rural South Georgia. A joke. I grew up in Hinesville, just south of Savannah, and I thought I was growing up in a small town, and now I'm in Osceola. I know that I actually didn't, and Hinesville's even bigger now. I don't even recognize the place.
Right.
My parents still there. But what would you, like, as far as, I don't know, just talk about how things are going here, because you've been here in Coffee County for how long?
I've been here, May will be 3 years.
Okay.
So in May of 2021 will be my third year here, and this year, following up on 2020, in 2021, in a lot of these projects usually take anywhere from 6 months to a year to come to fruition. But
yeah,
this will be our most successful year in the history of this community as
wow,
far as capital investment and new job creation.
And what do you attribute that to? Because that's, you know, everyone probably thinks of the pandemic.
I can't take the credit for all of that. The only thing I can take credit for is managing it as it came in. But a lot of it is from a lot of the new capital investment and new job creation is from our existing industries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that planned well before me, we've had a long history of industrial development here in this community. And those guys deserve the credit for having that foresight and the planning and getting the infrastructure in place. But I'm here managing it now, and I think that we have a great opportunity. We're in a great community. We've got great infrastructure. We talked earlier about broadband. And during the pandemic, the best outlet I had to reach out to the world and still do networking was through the internet.
Hmm.
And you've got to have good resources to be able to operate
right
through the internet. And we have that here. We've got everything, fiber optics. We've got it in the ground. Now, it doesn't reach out to every nook and cranny of the county, but it is available and it can be brought. And especially now with the renewed focus by the state of Georgia to make sure that we have those resources available everywhere. I think it's really going to help this community and a lot of the others really bloom once more.
I always ask folks kind of near the end of the interview, and so this is our final episode of the three small towns of Coffee County, I'll kind of give you the same opportunity. If someone who is an investor, a business person who might be looking for either an expansion somewhere else, second location, or heck, a first location because they want to start something new, go ahead and pitch them on why they should be giving Coffee County a second look.
Well, Coffee County is the natural choice. No, it's a great place to do business. We're very business friendly. And what I found, what really sold me on this community as a practitioner when I was looking at it, was the ease with which we can make things happen here. Everything is cost effective. The labor force here, we've got 400,000 people in this labor draw area here for the Douglas labor draw area. And it's a great skilled metal fabrication type. I think 80% of that labor force is in about 6 different industry segments. So metal fabrication is big, transportation equipment. I mean, we've got some really good niche markets. And again, it's diverse. So if you're looking for a good workforce, this would be a place to come. We've got the educational resources here, the South Georgia State College, Wiregrass Technical College. We've got the workforce development. And our Board of Education here is phenomenal with their focus on workforce development. We're really trying to match the education of our youth here in this community to the jobs that are available in this community. And we're happy to train anybody that's willing to come in and go to work.
Well, exciting things happen in Douglas and Nichols and Broxton and Ambrose and all of Coffee County.
Yeah, you've got a lot to choose from as far as what type of lifestyle you want to live, what type of housing you want to live in. You can be out and be in some of the more rural areas and not have to face any traffic at all if you choose. And, come to work at a plant here or build your plant here.
Yeah.
And have that large labor draw area. People love to live out in the outer areas and commute into work. So we have, I forget how many counties it is, but we draw in 11,000 people a day into our community commuting into Douglas.
And looking to draw in some more.
Absolutely.
John, thanks for inviting me over and letting me explore and share the small towns of Coffee County. And thanks again for your support in all this.
I appreciate the opportunity and really enjoyed the program and appreciate all that you do for rural communities, regardless of which state they're in.
All right. Thanks, John. Erwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Erwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Erwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to erwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Erwinomics. Helping small town business thrive.
Well, usually at this point, I would ask you how you got involved in local government, and you managed to not get involved, at least in elected office, because like I said to you before, sometimes being a principal and being in the administration of your school system ends up getting more political than some of the elected folks.
Yeah, very true.
But you've actually avoided it, and I was curious to find out. Your mother and your father were both very actively involved in Nichols local government. So talk about who they are, what they've done, and some of the experiences you kind of get. And maybe that's what kept you from wanting to run for office that's or be involved at City Hall.
Yeah. The mayor here in Nichols, Dwayne Street, I think he is the longest serving mayor in the state of Georgia. I mean, he's been mayor as long as I've known.
I know it's 40 plus years.
Yeah.
So the exact number.
Yeah, he's been here. And so,
what's funny is I've talked to several people that I know they've been in office for 20 ish years, and they don't even know how to tell you. I've asked them, oh man, you asked me that question, I have no idea. So he may not know how many years exactly without getting out a calendar and figuring out when he was elected.
Well, Dwayne and my father, Glenn, he was, they went to school together, graduated from Nichols
High School.
There we go
right across the street.
So in their younger years, when Dwayne ran for mayor, and my father was on city council at that time. Mm-hmm. Don't know how many years that was, but he started off at city council here in Nichols. So that's really, I remember sitting on the back porch, and of course, you know, people would come over and they would talk politics.
Right.
What was going on, what we needed to go on, and that kind of stuff. And
it
was
here's just, what we need to do at the next meeting.
Exactly. It's just really interesting. Again, a young boy trying to figure all that out, just sit back and listen. There was another gentleman that would come and sit on the back porch, Mr. Ed Lott. He was just so logical and be able to say, no, I don't think you need to do that. And even as a young boy, I remember him saying those things. But sitting on the back porch, listening to all that. So my dad was city council. He left there, and then he was elected to the county commissioner.
Okay.
So he was in that seat for a while. Then after that, he came back, and then a few years later, he ran for city commissioner here, and he's now city commissioner pro tem. And again, through all of that, Dwayne has always been the mayor.
He stayed there the whole time.
Still the mayor.
Your dad couldn't make up his mind. City, county.
Exactly. And also during that, you mentioned my mother right there. She started off as a city clerk and was here when I was, in middle school, I believe it was. And she, I say recently retired, but she was here maybe 25 years. And she retired and she started keeping my children. So I gave her another job. So my family has always been around politics. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was your, because you're sitting here kind of, I guess, listening to these conversations and on the back porch you're talking about where people kind of figure stuff out and make decisions in a small town. What kind of impression did that give you? Were you just in awe of this, or did you think some of the stuff they were talking about was just ridiculous?
Well,
or both.
I was trying to figure it out. I'm like, because it's, there's always angles. If you do this, this is going to happen, in politics. But I will say this. This is one thing that I, reflecting back on it, again, someone would disagree with each other. But they remained friends. It was not, nasty as it is seems to be today, because they were always friends. They respected each other. They respected their opinions. Looking back on it, I think more about it now. But I just always thought, I may not agree with you, but, I respect you for your position. And that really, thinking back, that's where I got that kind of philosophy from, is sitting around there. One said, no, you don't need to do that. Now, this is why. And they, yeah, we need to do that and everything. Again, it was never, I'm sure they may have gotten mad with each other, but it just never seemed that way there on the back porch. I remember one time they were talking about, it was actually a gentleman's dog that got killed and because of some stray dogs. And they were talking about putting a leash law in effect. Well, you got to remember back then, that was a major deal to tell people what to do with their dogs.
And some days it still is.
Okay. And so they were talking about, how do we need to do this? And so that was very, and they were going to pick up the stray dogs is basically what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of interesting. And we had a dog that never was leashed.
Right.
And my dad was like, well, no, what about Sam? What is he? So it was, that was just interesting because I guess dogs kind of, I tuned in when I was listening But yeah. But that back porch was very interesting.
Whether as a child growing up listening to that or as an adult, because you still live here, what are some of the issues that Nichols is had to tackle, other than, of course, the leash law and the stray dogs?
Yeah. I guess, again, it goes back during my era. The biggest part was the consolidation. We already mentioned a little bit about that. That was a big issue. Again, trying to, not just the consolidation, but the effects of the consolidation. And shortly after, our state representative at the time, we were able to work to get a prison here. And that really kind of vitalized, brought back the town that it was. So that was really a time during that, it was kind of a make or break Nichols, whether it's going to still be here, die like some of the small towns. And we kind of weathered it during that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This has happened before. It's not the first time, but we're in a small town in a rural area, but Nichols is not the county seat.
That's right.
And so the county seat ends up, Osceola is the county seat in Urban County. We're the only municipality in Urban County. So it's kind of the hub of things, your government buildings, that ends up being where your commerce is and everything like that. How's that been over the years? Have we tried to bring commerce? You actually mentioned there was a little more when there was a high school. So that's been a challenge too. Was the prison effort kind of we got to do something here because of this?
Yeah.
Was a reaction to it?
And also too, I'll say even actually before we had two sewing factories here, and my mother worked in, actually, I think both of them at one time. And of course, the manufacturers went away. And, that was really devastating to the town as well. But there's always been efforts to bring more industry in. But I think, too, it's gotten to a point now that, people are so mobile with their vehicles that they can travel 20 minutes to go to work nowadays. And I think it ends up, everybody goes towards Douglas or towards Alma and that. But, there's been some efforts to bring in other industries.
Mm-hmm. I haven't asked this yet. What is what's the population of Nichols?
Yeah, I think right now about 2,700 people, I think, right now. And you know, of course, with COVID, I don't know what's going to be shown this year.
The census I'm curious to see the results because they're going to be so skewed because the way the year it was not a perfect year for doing counting of people. The normal activities to encourage the registration.
Yeah, nothing was perfect or normal, goodness, was it goodness, this year? Goodness.
And do you guys, I think you said you have a festival. What are they kind of like? Yeah. What would you come do in
Fall Nichols? Festival. Okay. I mean, we have, and then our youth park we have out there. A lot of, we show cows, horses. A lot of the high schools, I think, use that also. Very nice facility. And then again, our festival right here, Founders Days. And one of the things that we have is parade. And of course, a lot of vendors that come and everything. And just again, going back to the high school, you know, high school homecoming, we'd have our parade, and now the only parade that we have is during Founders Day. Yeah. So that, and a lot of, you know, you don't see a lot of people. That's the only time you see a lot of people on the street. I guess the last time was when the Olympic torch that came through. That was a
Right through here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Olympic torch came through here
for the Atlanta Olympics in 1996.
Yes, I was one of the runners during that time.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that was. Came through at midnight.
I was just going to ask because I know it's continuous.
Yes.
And it comes all the way across the country and everything, but you don't always get to control a primetime thing. So.
No, you don't. So. That was a little small boy, country boy like me.
How old were you when you got to do that?
Let's see. I was 25, 26.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
So what was that like? Because that's pretty neat. I've seen pictures of people because it did come through around Osceola too.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. It came through here. How far did you get to carry it? I know it's they're passing it off to so many people. It's not always far.
It was really interesting in that they did a campaign or something that people wrote in to select heroes or whatever it was called at the time. Okay. I don't remember what it was called.
Don't be humble. You're a local hero.
I don't remember what it was called, but it was, I think
it's kind of like how they got you to be principal. They all rallied behind you and didn't tell you.
It was very, very hometown heroes, is I believe what the title was.
Yeah.
It was at the time. And again, I don't know how I was selected, but I was selected to run. So really at the start of the red light, which is just right down the road, I mean, just right down 32 right here. And then we ran here to the city hall and they did a proclamation. We had the torch and everything. And then we ran. I mean, really, with the adrenaline, I could have ran to Douglas if I wanted to. But, you know, when it was at midnight and probably, I don't know, about 11:30, I was still sitting at my house thinking, well, nobody's going to be there. I don't think, you know, I'll get there when I get there kind of thing. And when I arrived, the town, I mean, it was just packed.
Everybody showed up.
Yeah, everyone showed up.
I didn't care what time it was.
It was really, I mean, so it was, they put you on it like a bus. I walked up and they gave you this uniform. You had shorts and a shirt and everything. So I was the only one dressed like that.
Yeah.
And the guy came and got me and said, you need to come with me. And we went on this bus and there was, I think, two other runners here, and they were from other places. I didn't know them. Now I do know them. They are.
Yeah, you carry the torch
together. Yeah. So
it was a bonding experience.
It was bonding, and it was really interesting the way the procedural type things they wanted us to do.
Okay.
And they just didn't throw you a torch and say, here, go.
Well, I would assume there was at least a little orientation.
Yeah, a little orientation with that. He gave us that instruction, took us to a certain spot. I was there, and it was really interesting to see the state patrols, everybody that was around it.
Yeah, big deal.
It really was a big deal. It was really exciting.
Well, that's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
They got to come through little old Nichols, Georgia.
I still have my torch and my uniform and everything. I have it hanging up. And, you know, just to tell my kids about it, they don't have a understanding of what it was. But
they'll appreciate it.
That itself, and again, getting back to the Founders Day, I mean, a lot of people come out for those type of events. And you see people on the streets that, you haven't seen for years.
That ends up being, how did class reunion since, or, you know, those kinds of things? You said homecoming. Obviously, there's not a Nichols High School, so there can't be a homecoming anything, but do they use that Founders Day as kind of a get-together?
Yeah, a lot of people come back
for that
time. Yeah, because, again, you'll be able to see, going, and you really see it during the parade area where people will kind of always stand in certain areas, and you kind of know that family will be right there.
Yeah, because they got their spot.
That's their spot.
You're right. Better not take it.
That's exactly.
Or there'll be a family feud.
Yeah, and that was one of the things when I was a principal at Coffee High School is that the band had to be here. As I told my band director, Mr. Myers, I was like, you know, listen, I don't care what other festival, it's got to be in Nichols or I won't be able to go back down there.
That's right. So, that's right.
So we had.
I need to be able to go home.
Exactly. Exactly. So the band would always show. He was very good about doing that for me. Mm-hmm.
Well, Doc, as we kind of close things out, I want to give you the same opportunity that I give to every guest on the podcast, let you speak directly to the Small Town Podcast audience. Tell them why they should come visit, maybe for Founders Day, maybe some other time, or maybe they should just come live in Nichols, Georgia.
Yeah, I just, again, reflecting back on my time here in Nichols, Georgia, the family-oriented atmosphere, the friends that you see every day, the elementary school, the quality elementary school that we have. I mean, I know the principals and a lot of the teachers still there. You get a quality education. And, you know, again, the key word is just quality. I've mentioned about relationships. You have that here in a small community. And Nichols is, once you're a part of it, you realize that this is a good place for family, for your kids to be a part of. You know, my time here, I just never forget, and opportunities that they gave me also, you know, built me to be the person I am. So I think, you know, again, with small young children, this is an opportunity to build character, to be able to be successful people, I believe.
Well, Dr. Greg Tanner, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Thank you.
Well, Small Towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Dr. Greg Tanner for talking with me. And that wraps up this 3-episode series in Coffee County, Georgia. So I want to thank John Henry, Lisa Hodge, and the rest of the Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority for their hospitality and for hosting us in all their small towns. As always, I want to thank our season sponsors for Season 4 of Small Town Podcast, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, and of course, the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.